We're gonna talk about a chok, because this is the paraduma, right? Paraduma is the classic chok. I'm gonna ask two different questions. Number one is, what is a chok? And number two is there a value in understanding a chok? Trying to decipher the meaning behind the chok. I'm gonna ask two different questions. They're really two separate shiurim, but there are two different points about a chok. So the first point I want to make, hello Mark. The first point I want to make is the Gemara in Yoma makes the following statement. The Gemara in Yoma, this is actually from Parshas, I think, Achrimos. But that's where some of the teaching comes from. It says, "Es chukosai tishmoru mispatai tasu." But I figure this is Parshas Chukas. This is, you know, Parduma is very often viewed as the classic chok. So let's see what the difference between a chok and a mishpat is. So the Gemara in Yoma, Daf Samach Zayin Amud Beis, says, Tanur Rabbanan, rabbis teach, Es mishpatai tasu, you should do my mishpatim. So what are mishpatim? Devarim shel mole nichtavu, din hu shichtavu. What does that mean? These are things, what's il mole, if they have not been written, din hu shichtavu.
It's impossible to understand that.
Mishpatim. That's you think it would have been written. Right. If they wouldn't have been written, then they would have, like, if they weren't written in the Torah,
you have to write them.
Yeah, or like they would be written, right? People would understand it, right? So of Elohein, so what are examples then? Look at these examples in the Gemara. Elohein, Avodah Zarah. That's interesting. Right? Would you have picked Avodah Zarah as a mishpat? All right, into, okay. Gilo Arayos. Maybe, yes. Maybe, okay. It depends what type of gila rayos. No, I'm not trying to be... Shvichos dabim, murder. Yeah, that part, shvichos dabim is pretty easy. Yeah. Gezel, theft. Birchas Hashem, cursing God. It's a little strange, this list, okay? In other words, let's see the categories of chukosai tishmoru. Devarim shah satan, vumos olam meishivim aleim. These are things that Satan and the nations of the world, you know, respond to them and say they try to challenge them. Elohein, what are they? Achilas chazir, eating pork. Okay, yeah. Levisha shatnez, wearing shatnez. Vachalitzas yavama, and doing chalitza for yavama. Vitaras mitzora, and purifying a mitzora. Vesar mishaleach, and sending away the scapegoat on Yom Kippur. Okay, and he says, Shematomar, maybe you'll say, Mase Tohem, these are silly, these are wondrous things. Tamalomar, Ani Hashem. Okay, let's think about these categories of Chukim and categories of Mishpatim here. So the way the Gemara lists categories of Chukim, we got pork, shatnez, okay? That's probably makes sense, right? Now, the next one is what? The Chalitzas Yevaba.
You mean it makes sense that it doesn't make sense?
It makes sense that's in the category of Chuk, right? I mean, it's interesting, the shoe of the Yavama, as opposed to the Chalitza, as opposed to the whole Yavama. So that's interesting. And and then the Taras Mitzora. What's Taras Mitzora? The purification of the Mitzora, like as opposed to every other aspect of the Mitzora. It's interesting, like that specific issue. And the Sar Mishtaleach, as opposed to what? Every other Korban. So it's a little, you know, it's a little strange that they picked some of the details. Like, I would have just said, all korbanos. Why specifically this, that? Okay, everything else, every other korban, I got. I understand. The scapegoat that runs away, that one, yeah, that one's a little difficult to understand. Like, it's a little strange, right? Yeah. You're with me, right? Okay.
Well, we sort of have an idea about korbanos, even if we don't know the exact. We sort of have a korban, like a chatas is instead of us.
Okay, and a sar mishaleach. Sar mishaleach, we're setting away our...
But the korbanos, Judaism came from paganism originally, and the korbanos were just a normal... It wasn't...
Right.
It was...
So, right, okay, good. God, so now there is... Right, so you're saying the sacrifice... Right, okay, okay. So we're going to get to that. Good. Now, the categories of mishpatim... Now, idolatry, that's interesting, right? And there is the assumption here is that idolatry is a mishpat, that it's universally accepted. You know, will you say that nowadays? I don't know.
Or certainly back then.
Maybe back then, right? In other words, Avodah Zarah, the prohibition of Avodah Zarah, I would say that Avodah Zarah and Birchas Hashem, right, cursing God, it's only logical, it's only intuitive, if you believe in certain foundational principles. Like, it's based on what you believe. right? It's based on what you believe, that you believe that there is a God.
So and
if
one
you,
God.
And one God. Right? If you believe one God, okay, so then it's a mishpat that, right? It's a mishpat that, you know, Avodah Zarah is wrong. It's a mishpat that Birkas Hashem is wrong. So like, does it depend? I mean, it sort of raises the question, does a chok mishpatim depend on society? Is the definition of a chok or a mishpat?
I would think so.
Society, it's interesting to think about that. Like we're gonna try to conclude that. But it's interesting, like now that we're starting to think about that, like we tend to think these are chukim and these are mishpatim. But already you have this list where you could sort of see, well, this doesn't sound like a chok. This doesn't sound like a mishpat nowadays, but maybe it was mishpat back then. It's interesting, I think. Also, like in terms of Gil Arayos, now, is it clear why all Gil Arayos are definitely forbidden? I mean, you could say that, you know, being with intimate with a man being intimate with a married woman who's not his wife. So we could see maybe that's intuitive, but I don't know. You know, incest. I mean, we think it's not appropriate. But question: what's the reason? Like, it's universally accepted. Don't get wrong, Corey. This I don't think incest is correct. I don't think it's correct, but like, it's just that it's not correct.
Again, you need to the foundational.
You need some foundational principle, right? Homosexual, you know, mishkav zachor.
Right, some family structure that you're trying to protect.
Right. Yeah. So I'm saying, so it's based on you know, the reason might be unclear, but like it's you know, but. But you need some kind of foundational principle.
It's not universal.
Right, maybe not, right. So, right. In other words, it could be something, a mishpat could be something that's based on universal consensus, even if we don't necessarily understand, we can't pinpoint the reason. It could be something that's society, like, is the mishpat something that's intuitive, or is the mishpat something that has universal consensus we should or should not do? Like, an interesting question, right? So, now, what's fascinating is that, and just to make this point even stronger, that it's societal, is you look in the Rambam, Hilchos Me'ila, right? The Rambam, like other Rishonim, so they, let's say they like a Rambam was a code of Jewish law, so his code is based on the Gemara. So if he's quoting what's a mishpat, what's a chok, you would think that he would follow the similar principles of the Gemara, right? This is the Rambam, the end of Hilchos Me'ila. Me'ila is improper use of sacred property. So he says, Harei Nemar B'Torah, this is Perches Alach Ches. Harei Nemar B'Torah, Rishmartim is called Mechukosai, it's called Mishpatai V'Sisim Osam. You should observe all my chukos and all my mishpatim, you should do them. Amru Chachamim, Litein Shmira V'Asiyah L'Chukim Mishpatim, you should guard and do chukim and mishpatim, V'Asiyah do it. You should do the chukim and the shmir. What asiya means? You should do the chukim and shmir. You should be careful. Don't think the chok is less than the mishpat. So now he's going to define what they are. The mishpatim. What are mishpatim? Him a mitzvah shetaman galoy v'tovas asiyasam b'olam hazeh. A mishpat is the reason is revealed. And it's good to do their thing. It's good to do it in this world. And the benefit of doing them is known. Kigol, gazel, shvichos dam mekibud aveim. So he has two of the categories that are in the Gemara. He adds kibud aveim, but he no longer has what? No avodah zarah, no birkas hashem. Interesting, no gil arayos. Right. Then vachukim. And the chukim are mitzvahs that the reason is not known. And he gives what are the examples? And these are things that you shouldn't question them. And the nations say they're not good. They're silly. And what are the examples? Skip a line. Okay, go on. Iser basar chazer. Okay, pork. Basar b'chalav, meat and milk. Okay. So ve'egla rufa, egla rufa, paraduma, paraduma. V'sar hamishtaleach and sa'ir hamishtaleach. Okay, and then v'kama haya David amach mitzar min aminim min akum shahoy b'shim alchukim. And he says David amach said he was giving so much distress from the because heretics and from the non-Jews that they challenged the chukim because man shahoy rodfim also be chuvas hashaker shorchim lifi kol tzedas adam haya mosi tevekas patur. Okay, so he has a whole bunch of things about them, but let me skip a few lines. V'chala korbanos, like I said, the second last line. V'chala korbanos kula mikla chukim heim. It says the Rambam, all the korbanos are chukim. Now, what's interesting is that he says, well, what's a chuk? Sari meshdaleach. And he says, and all korbanos are chukim. Like why are you breaking out sari meshdaleach as opposed to korbanos? So what's going on here? So it's pretty clear. This I saw. There's an article in tradition for years back by Rabbi Menachem Schrader who made this point. He said if you compare the Rambam to the Gemara, the Rambam has a different list, right? Now he actually points out that there is a manuscript, not an R. There's the Gemara, like our Gemara, is based on a certain manuscript of the Gemara. There could have been different versions, and there are some small differences, different manuscripts. There was a manuscript, apparently, that had Basar B'chalav and Egla Rufa as one of the examples. Okay, maybe the Ram had that. And he also adds Paraduma from our Parsha. So that's widely referred to Chok in rabbinic literature. But basically, the according to the Gemara, what's a Mishpat according to the Gemara? It's a mitzvah that should be universally accepted. That's universally accepted. That's the realm of Mishpatim. The Rambam says it's something that a Mishpat is something that is ethically obvious and based on universally accepted Jewish norms.
So, like Basar B'chalav sounds like it's an ethical thing, though. And he has there.
So he has right. So he has. So apparently, Basar B'chalav wasn't a version of the Gemara as a chok. The Rambam, this is sort of Josh's point, the Rambam, the Mor Nevuchim, basically makes this point where he says that Lefi Teva Adam, he says in Mor Nevuchim Chela Gimel, Perek Lamed Beis, he basically makes the point that, right, everyone used to worship the stars and everyone believed in worshiping, you know, different stars and they're offering sacrifices. And then what happened? So Hashem just said, okay, We're gonna offer korbanos because you couldn't just tell someone not to offer korbanos. The Rambam said it's like if someone said around the 12th century, the Rambam says it's like if someone come nowadays and say that you should not daven to Hashem in the 12th century. You should just think about God. Okay, how can we do that? We have to daven. We have to pray. Just think about God. Don't pray. Maybe some people would like that, but okay. But you say just think about it. You couldn't tell people not to offer sacrifices. So what's the point here? So the point here that Rabbi Schrader makes is that could be that in the times of the Gemara, right, incest, or so number one is sacrifices and belief in God were accepted by everyone. So it was a mishpat. In the days of the Rambam, sacrifices are no longer seen as a natural way to worship. So for the Rambam, he quotes the Gemara Yoma, but he adds sacrifices, because sacrifices in the Rambam's time became a chok. It was not a chok in the days of the Gemara. It became a chok in the days of the Rambam. Okay? And then in the time of the Gemara, incest and adultery, and, you know, so that, and that was, and common Jewish beliefs were mishpatim, but the Rambam felt differently. And so the point is that mitzvos don't change, but our understanding of mitzvos do change. Could be, I'll give you an example, I don't want to be very controversial here, but it could be that one could argue that Mishkav Zachar 50 years ago was a mishpat. Maybe now it's a chok. You can still argue it's a mishpat nowadays. What I'm saying is it's actually a very important point, especially when talking to the younger generation. In other words, they can say this doesn't make it. Like you read something earlier about a certain mitzvah, and you say it's unethical, it's wrong, and then the younger generation say, why is it so unethical? And the answer might be that something maybe was a mishpat 50, 60 years ago, it's still usur, but it's become a chok. That's not a problem. That's not a hashkafic problem. Because that's exactly what the Rambam did to say when it came to korbanos. It's a fascinating point.
When we say something is unethical, I mean, can it still be a chok?
So what's unethical? So let me say it differently. Maybe it's not good unethical. I'm saying if we say a practice, certain behavior is usur because it's unethical. Okay? So I can say now, I personally would not say now that Mishkav Zachar is an unethical practice. I would say that Torah usurs it. What's the reason? We can give that. I don't know. I'm not sure. It's a theologically challenging. Why would Hashem do this? I don't know. You know, I'm not going to give a whole svar. For me, the way I address it, I say it's a chok. For me. You know, it could be, we can give different svaros, maybe yes, maybe no. But what I'm saying is, some people feel the need to explain a reason behind it. Obviously, we love to practice a religion where we know all the reasons for everything. At the same time, we also understand that a number of things in Judaism don't have a reason that's easily understandable to us. That exists.
We would say shatnez is a chok. We wouldn't say shatnez is unethical.
Correct. Correct. So what I'm saying is, shatnez is there are chokim and there are mishpatim. But what I'm saying is the definition of what's a chok and a mishpat may depend on society. That's chiddush number one I'm saying here. As I mean, Rabbi Schrader writes an article, but it's a very interesting point because when we deal with certain things that we said, oh, this can't be, and we try to prove how ridiculous it is to do this. I mean, I'm thinking Mishkav Zachar is probably the prime example of this. There could be other things, you know. There could be.
But isn't it juxtaposed with bestiality?
I don't know what that means. It's described as an abomination, but they're also, if you don't have weights and measures, it's also called an abomination. So I'm giving that as an example. I may be wrong. You may be able to make an ethical argument why it's forbidden. I'm not saying you can't.
But I'm saying it still feeds into what you're saying because maybe now we're not going to consider bestiality, even if it's juxtaposed, whatever it is. They don't consider that now bestiality.
I'm saying I don't know. I'm saying we can think of that, right. But what I'm saying is that you don't have to give just because if you look at the way rabbis of 50, 60, 100 years ago, the way they viewed something, and they gave an ethical reason why something is forbidden or obligated, even if you don't understand that reason, and it goes from being a mishpat to a chok, that's okay. Because the Rambam did that as well. That's point number one. Point number two.
Is there any practical halachic
difference
whether something's a chok or a mishpat?
So I don't think so. But I don't think so. But my point is, our job, I think, is to try to understand. Like part of Torah is about we do the mitzvos, we learn about the mitzvos, and through learning and doing, we become better people. So it's how you approach when you do a mitzvah. And what you're thinking is when you're doing it impacts you. So I think, in other words, are you doing this because I have emunah on HaKadosh Baruch Hu? This is what he says, and I'm working on my emunah. In other words, let's say when I give tzedakah, so part of my goal when I give tzedakah is to become a more charitable person, to become a more generous person. There's value to that. So sometimes the reason can shape who you are. It may not determine what you're actually doing. But it determines your intent, and your intent impacts you as a person. So whether you view it as a chok or a mishpat actually impacts you as a person. It may not impact the maisa mitzvah or the iser, but it impacts how you relate to it and how we relate to mitzvahs, because our Judaism is about learning and doing or not doing, and that shapes us as individuals.
You can say that about tzedakah, but you can't say that about basar v'chalav.
Oh, okay. So the next part of the shir. Next part of the shir is there any room to, basar v'chalav? Like, you can't. What lesson can we learn from basar v'chalav? By the way, it could be that when we don't eat basar v'chalav, all we say is, I'm working my emunah. If I don't have a reason for this, and when there's value to that. But I think it's more complicated than that. If you look in Rashi, in this week's Parsha, so in Perek Yotes Pasuk Beis, Pasuk says, Zos Chukas HaTorah, this is Chukas HaTorah, Shesfisha, Satek Umas Olam, Monim Es Yisrael, Lomar, Ma Mitzvah Zos, the nation of the world asks, they go to the Jewish people, they say, what is this mitzvah? Ma Tam, Yeshba, what's the reason? Lefich Chukas HaBachukah, it's a chok. It's a decree, and you have no right to question it. Now, as we look at Paraduma as a chok, they're going to challenge you for it. No, no, you know, you do it because God said so, even though it doesn't seem to make any intuitive sense. Okay. However, if you go down a few psukim, Rashi says, in this phrase, Titmat Arav, the one, I think he's talking about someone who administers the ashes of the Paraduma, he becomes Tamei for one day. Then he goes, so then Rashi goes on, at the end of this, the very end of the discussion of Paraduma, he says, Umidrash Agada Hatakti Miyisodah Shraboshah Darshan Vizel. And there's an Agadic tradition, and I learned from this Rabbi Moshe Darshan. And he's now, Rabbi Moshe Darshan is going to explain the symbolism of all the details of Paraduma. The chok of Paraduma. V'yichoy lacha. So mishalahem, kishem shehem, you should take for yourself. Now you should take from your own funds. Kishem shehem parku nizbe'ezav la'egal mishalahem, kach yavol yavizu l'kapar mishalahem. I guess you have to fund the Paraduma. The technicalities, I'm not 100% clear, but it seems that the Jewish people have to fund the Paraduma. I guess it's not coming from, I don't know where else, but it's coming from the Jewish people. Why? Because they used their wealth for the Egel, so now they should use it as an atonement. Why a Paraduma? Why a red cow? Moshe Leben Shivcha Shetinev Paltin Shabalach. Let's say the son of a maidservant who dirtied the palace of the king. Amru, they said, Tavo ima v'tkerecha tzoa. So let the mother come and clean up what he dirtied. Kach tavo para tchaper al egel. So the cow, the para, is mechaper on the egel azav. Okay? Why is it adaba, paraduma, red? Because im yadimu katola shechet, sid is called red. Tamima, what's tamima? Why is it whole? I'm sorry, unblemished. Because Jewish people were tamimim, they were first unblemished, and venasbo balimum, they became blemished through the sin of the golden calf. Tovazav tchaper aleham yachsu letamusam. So this will serve as an atonement. So they return to their state of being unblemished. Lo alei ol, the paraduma can't have any yoke on it. Kshim sheparkum aleihem ol shamayim, because they unloaded from them the yoke of heaven. El azar hakohen. But this is interesting, but I'm just pointing out to you that paraduma is for when you become tamei. So egel azav was a sin. So I'm just saying that, like, that's a question unto itself. But I'm interested in that question for purpose of the shir. What's going on here? What's going on here is we are giving reasons for the chok. So you just told me, okay, well, Beit Basar V'Chol is different than Paraduma. But I thought a chok is we don't give reasons.
I guess there's a difference between, right, Mishpat you say is like self-evident.
Right.
Chok you could like come up.
And it might be true, it might not be true.
That's why. Yeah, it wouldn't be self-evident, right? Okay. You wouldn't say like, oh, without Paraduma, we would like have these thoughts.
So
I think it's more than that. I think not just not self-evident. You can't assume that you're correct. You could try to guess and try to figure it out.
Okay.
But this is my theory.
So in other words, are we encouraged to do that?
I know from other stuff we learned from the Rambam, he would say, yes, we should. I believe he said, yes, we should.
I mean, think about Moshe Adar. I think that Rashi's quoting from Moshe Adarshan that he believes that we should be trying to do that.
But I think Rambam also said that, didn't he?
Right. So he tries to find Tamei Mitzvah. That's an interesting question. The Rambam in his Mor Nevuchim, he tries to find reasons for the mitzvahs. It's not so simple. It could be that the Rambam is dealing with people who have questions. So if you have questions, So then we're going to try to give you a philosophy behind some of these mitzvahs because you have questions. Maybe if you don't have questions, it might be better. So it's not so clear. But I want to read to you. This is like Rabbi Soloveitchik. He goes on. He has a lot. Each different ingredient of the paraduma, he has a reason for. So I just want to point out to you, this is like Rabbi Soloveitchik has an essay, May We Interpret Chukim. So Rav Soloveitchik says there are three types of questions you could ask, right, about this any phenomenon. Why, how, and what? And the truth is, I always get confused between the how and the what. But like I always like, so we're going to go with his definition. He's obviously right. I was like, I think of it differently, but we'll go through this. Why probes the motivation to establish why things are the way they are? The motivation. How is the explanation is how they work? And what is interpretations to establish meaningfulness? Why and how pertain to qualities which presumably are inherent in things? And what deals with subjective formulations, which are superimposed by the beholder for a purpose of utility and convenience, right? So why is, inherently, why do we need this? How does it work? And what is the meaning, what's the meaningfulness to me? So let's read a little bit here. Asking why for mitzvahs. Apply each of the above three questions regarding Hashem and his mitzvahs, one meets with differing results. Asking why Hashem issued certain mitzvahs is seeking to comprehend the unfathomable. It is more than simply a matter of being unable to comprehend the Hashem mind and motivation. It is more profound than that. When we ask why, in the human context, we are truly motivated, it's what we're truly asking what motivated him. A correct reply, then, in order to achieve objective B, H and A had to be employed. Otherwise, B would remain inaccessible. You know, now, in order for someone to achieve this, you had to do this. That's why. I did this in order to achieve this. Because the only way I can do B is by doing A. Obviously, when it comes to God, you can't do that. Like Hashem had to do this in order to do this, right? Hashem had to overcome some inability or deficiency by using an intermediary agent. All is readily accessible and realizable to him. The best and only answer is Gzeira Hil Melfanai. Why did Hashem do this? He willed it. That's it. We can't understand why. We don't understand why. We just know that he willed it. Asking how is also nonsensical for Chukim. How does the sprinkling of the watery ashes of the paraduma cleanse the ritually unclean? I guess we need a chemist to teach us how this works. A spiritual chemist. How does this work? That's also nonsensical. How does the goat sent to Azazel bring forgiveness on Yom Kippur? How does Chalitza release a widow for remarriage? We willingly and reverently accept the incomprehensible how, even as we dutifully embrace the unfathomable why. Why does Hashem need to do this? I don't know. What does it mean for Hashem? How can do, right? And how does this work? I don't know. But asking what for mitzvahs? Remaining is the third question, what? Which inquires about the meaningfulness of particular mitzvahs to the individual and to society. This is a legitimate pursuit. Nay, it may even be meritorious to inquire, how can I integrate and assimilate this mitzvah into my religious consciousness and outlook? What thoughts and emotions should I feel when the Paraduma chapter is read in the synagogue? How could it help me achieve Devekus, a greater closeness to Hashem? So I think, again, you said, like, what's a nafkamina if something's a mishpat or a chok? It's, again, mitzvahs are meant not to be learned, to be observed, and through this combination, we draw close to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, we draw close to Klal Yisrael, we draw closer to Hashem, and we can struggle with, is this a chok, is this a mishpat? And I think we can go back and forth, and even if something is a chok, that we could say, this is meaningful to me. Like you said, you could be wrong, but it's a worthwhile endeavor to struggle with it, to try to find meaning, and to gradually we shape, the more we learn, the more we do mitzvot, we sort of shape a religious worldview that works for us, knowing we are imperfect human beings trying to understand the divine. But the engagement, it seems that the Torah, the part of the Torah, the lifestyle the Torah expects for us is engagement through action and through study and to struggle, is this a mishpat, is this a chok? And even if it's a chok, to try to figure out how it's meaningful to me.